From knockdown, shoot 'em up arcade gaming to full-on stand your ground sim racing. The transition isn't as easy as you may think, but thankfully you're not alone. There is always help when it comes to telemetry, car setup, and even training to give you the tools to go that little bit faster. We get an insight into how the pro sims approach race setup, and also how it works at an endurance event. Off the top of my head, the Le Mans 24 Hour, a race where multiple drivers share the one car, how do you go about setting that up? Special guests include Byron Clark to give us an insight into his first sim experience, virtual racing skills, and learning to race a manual while still not being old enough to hold an actual driver's license. We're also joined by cricketing great Brad Hodge to chat about his involvement in Erebus Motorsport and the Supercars E-Series Celebrity Challenge. Welcome to eRacing X, a podcast dedicated to bringing you some news, information, and an insight into what the virtual racing world is all about. Welcome, everybody, to eRacing X. I'm joined by Andrew Clark. Hey, young Clarky.
Not bad. Internet problems tonight, so if I'm a bit scratching, I drop in and out and go at some NBN, so blame me.
Sounds like most of us. And also, we're joined by Nathan Humpets. How you going, Nathan?
Pretty good, guys. Pretty good. How are you guys going?
Excellent. I should say, race winner, Nathan Humpets.
I was going to say, yeah, we're not doing as well as he is after his efforts.
Was he mix and fix? Mate, you trounced him on the weekend. Tell us a little bit about that.
Oh, yeah, we had our usual Sunday night league race in the Aussie Mix and Fix GT series. So put in a reasonable qualifying effort in starting fourth in the top split server and just managed to keep out of trouble and keep it smooth and came home with a nice win for Fusion Sim Racing.
All right. Okay, to get straight into it, let's do a bit of a general racing roundup. We've all been looking at the supercars, and I have to admit it's probably one of the best shows in e-racing, so to speak. It's just a really good production, the commentary and all that. And obviously, they got some big people racing. And Anton DiPasquale scored his first win, and we shared the win to him and also
Van Gisbergen and Lando.
And Lando, yes, I was just going to Lando Norris won the reverse grid race.
Yeah, I thought he was going to win that by a lot more, though. But we saw him starting, I think it was fourth in the reverse grid. He thought, he's going to win this thing by half a minute. But he only just snuck through. I think he only won by about 2 or 3 seconds.
Well, he struggled in the first race.
Yeah, he did. He had a really rough first race because he got penalised for tapping someone in a corner and had to do a drive-through penalty and was, you know, dropped right down the back, which is...
That's a fair tap when you're going to get a drive-through, isn't it, Nathan?
Yeah, that's the way they saw it. He did give, I think it was Cam Waters, wasn't it? A bit of a nudge or...
Yeah, I think so, yeah. It was an interesting one because, obviously, if you're doing iRacing, you don't normally have a driving standards observer there to cast judgment, so it would all purely be based on what the data said, and you might get a two-second penalty or something.
So you might have got to slow down... And a pit lane penalty?
Yeah, well, no, he didn't get the slowdown. He just got a pit lane penalty. So as Craig Baird said, it's the first time he's given a drive-through penalty to a Formula One driver. So I think he was feeling pretty chuffed with himself over that. And I think he looked at Lando's face and was like, oh, I knew I did it. I didn't want to do it, but I did it. And, he served his drive-through and he finished down the back. So it meant he was starting right up the front in the reverse grid. And I thought, I honestly thought he was just going to walk away with it. But, you know, it was a really good battle early on. I think it was Hazelwood and they were having a good fight. And
he didn't have it all to himself.
Which was really good because I thought the other two races were, you know, very similar to what the supercars are when they raced at Cotter. It wasn't that good. So that battle between Hazelwood and Lando Norris, I thought, saved the day. It was a really good fight.
Okay. Give us a rundown on the points. Do you have anything on the points there?
I do. Scotty McLaughlin's leading on 14.19. Shane Van Gisbergen, who's probably won almost every second race since for about three rounds, is on 13.63. Cam Waters, super consistent, 13.36. And Anton DiPasquale is way back on 11.79 and really suffering from a few, from being on the rough side of the pineapple on a few incidents.
Oh, definitely. I've had trouble with the reverse grid races. But last race, he's in car, and I hope he's got it up. I'm going to go look for it. The way he avoided the melee at the start of the second race, or the reverse grid race, was pretty good. He had Brody Kostecki being his spotter, and it was like amazing, actually, yeah. How he weaved his way through.
Well, this is one of the great things, as we've spoken a couple of times, one of the great things about this sim racing thing is the ability to jump in and do it. So you're watching them on Twitch. So let's say you did choose Anton's Twitch feed and you were watching it. You do get to ride that with him, which is quite interesting. There is the ability, I think, to have multiple Twitches running at the same time now. So I'm going to explore that this week and see how many people we get on the multiple Twitch feed just to see what happens. And it's interesting. And even the Formula E stuff we watched was the same thing. Somebody just did a great drive down the left-hand side of an incident and came out really well on top. So, it's probably because there's a bit more chaos than a normal race in terms of cars spinning and belting around. You've really got to be alert to get through okay.
Okay. You've also been keeping an eye on Formula E. That seems to be all happening at the moment.
Yeah, I don't know whether anybody else is watching it much, but I quite enjoy the Formula E. The running on this week was on the Hong Kong track, which is the tightest thing you've seen ever. The turns they have are virtually just a concrete wall makes the hairpin.
Bloody hell.
You come down and you drive around it. So if that's your first corner, you can imagine what the first corner accident's going to be like. And it was.
I'm going to have to check it out.
But interestingly, they did qualifying in the rain this time around, which they didn't tell anybody about. So, they plug the little sim in and push the on button and it's raining. And so they had to qualify in the rain. So, we had a couple of strange results there. Montara was on pole and, in all reasonable circumstances, he was never going to be on pole. So when the race was starting in the dry, that was going to be interesting in itself. It could have been that waterfall again, except that it wasn't downhill. So we didn't get them tumbling down. But, Van Dorn got punted from behind and he got pushed into Montara and cars were going everywhere. And James Calado zip down the inside and end up in second spot from about ninth on the grid. it was quite fascinating to watch them get through that. But the other thing that's interesting that I'm finding so far is the damage on the car, particularly in the Formula E, you can't see it. They can have a wheel hanging off and it looks like it's okay. So, the championship leader, Max Gunther, clearly had a damaged car from that first lap, even though it looked okay, because his lap times were shocking and the car was inconsistent. And this is a bloke who won the first two rounds, so it wasn't that he can't drive or it wasn't that the car's ordinary. So he was really struggling, and they kept saying, the handling will be affected even though you can't see it. So a little bit different to the supercars where they lose bonnets or whatever, although interestingly in a supercar, when they lose the front splitter, they don't seem to lose any time. If you lost the front splitter in real life, you'd understeer into the nearest tree. So I find that. But, so you get the damage and you don't really know. Yeah, interesting. And a championship lead change this time around. So Pascal Wehrlein won the race and he took the championship lead from Max Gunther.
Nathan, you been watching any racing apart from competing in it yourself?
I watched a little bit of the Formula One racing last week, which was at Barcelona, the virtual Spanish Grand Prix. So that was, I think they're competing on the F1 2019 platform, but that was a fantastic battle at the end of the race between George Russell and Charles Leclerc. So Charles Leclerc, I think, had picked up a few wins already in previous rounds and has proven to be very, very handy in that game, actually. So it was great for Russell to get up at the end and a pretty exciting finish, actually. It was really good to watch.
You're also competing in the Aussie GT Mix and Fix. Correct me if I'm wrong, but we touched on that. You won. Could you go in a little bit more how the championship's going? How many rounds are left? A bit of a rundown of what's in store.
Yeah, so that championship is 12 rounds. Sunday night was the 10th round. The championship, I think the points table is looking extremely tight at the moment. I think I was second in the championship coming into last night, and the leader and third place were right behind me halfway through that race. So we thought it was going to go right down to the wire. And it was a bit fortunate, sort of did a bit of an Anton, kept out of trouble, avoided a few accidents, and eventually came away with the win, which was good by 5 or 6 seconds. But I think that leaves me in the lead in the championship by around 10 points, and it's 500 points for a win. So 10 points is not a very big margin.
Mackerel.
In 2 weeks, though, it'll be interesting. We've got another race at Gilles Villeneuve this coming Sunday night, which is a not a favourite track of mine, but I'll be trying not to hit the wall of champions.
Well, you don't have to do that because you're a champion, so, you know, fair enough. Put your moniker on it.
And then, yeah, we finish up at Detroit at Belle Isle, which is a bit of a bumpy, twisty, concrete-walled jungle. So, yeah, very tough last few rounds, but yeah, it's the same for everyone. So we'll represent Fusion Sim Racing and get in there and have a real crack at it.
Well, it helps does lead me into other things. And coming up soon, we're also going to be joined by Byron, your son, Andrew. We're going to be asking about the Erebus Junior Esports competition.
Yep.
He entered that, so we're going to ask him a little bit about that. But, Clarkie, you took a look at the Formula One Legends Challenge.
Yeah,
it's funny. Is that old cars? Is it just Legend Formula One drivers? What is that exactly?
It's just old drivers, really. It's funny what happens when the cat wakes you up chewing on your toe at 5 a.m. You know, you jump up and find that the Twitch is really happening on live, and it's you know, Nico Rosberg on a Formula One thing. So, of course, once I saw that, I jumped on and had a look, and I thought it was a really interesting series. So what they're doing is they're getting Formula One drivers, you know, past and present, to go in and do a bit of racing against each other in quite a unique format. And so this week it was Nico Rosberg versus David Coulthard, and they have a couple of other people come in. So I think Rosberg was racing the ex-Formula One driver Robert Doornbos, and Coulthard was racing a soccer player named Roberto Carlos. And they had to do 3 one-lap races against each other. And
what?
Yeah, 3 one-lap races, and which is quite, you know, you think one lap.
That's it.
Yeah, one lap and that's it. And you don't have much of a chance there to either to make a – if you make a mistake, it's over. But then you've just got to keep on pushing and try to get the gap in. And I thought that format was really quite fascinating. Coulthard won his one quite comfortably, and Rosberg won his comfortably as well. But the first 2 races in the Rosberg-Doornbos one was decided by contact and who came out of that best. So,
oh, no.
One got punted off and one got punted off, so they got one each out of that, and then Rosberg won the final race. Then they go into a challenge, the challenge one, and that's Rosberg versus Coulthard. And, Coulthard hit Rosberg and got a 2-second penalty, but still won easily because he punted him off so badly he was 8 seconds behind. And then Rosberg strangely switched to a Ferrari.
What?
Yeah, I know. He jumped out of the Mercedes and appeared on the grid in a Ferrari, and everyone went, oh, what's going on? I don't know what's happening. Anyway, and he had 2 lots of contact, and Coulthard was better with the elbows, and he won both of the races, so... The next challenge is over 5 laps, and it was all 4 drivers in it. And Rosberg was learning how to use his elbows more and punted Coulthard off and won that one. And then you get the 3rd one, which was the most interesting. So it was 25% of a real Formula One race distance, and they threw in what they called influencers. So it's a bunch of people who are, you know, influencers of motor racing on YouTube and so forth. So effectively gamers who are twitching well. And that's where it really showed out. And neither Rosberg nor Coulthard could finish in the points.
Oh, no. Oh, wow.
Yeah, so a young guy named Benjamin, who runs under the tag of Tiamat Murdoch, he won the race. And when he crossed the finish line, he's like pumping his fist in the air, and you can see the smile on his face. And he's been tweeting all day about how he's beaten Formula One drivers and a Formula One world champion and things. So I've reached out to him. I'm going to try and get him on the show next week for a bit of a chat just to see about it all. But it was a good little challenge, I thought. It was interesting. So good stuff. I enjoyed that. I'm going to put that in my calendar for the next time it comes up to watch it.
Is it a series, or is it just a lot of
series? No, it's a whole series.
Does it have a points with it?
Yeah, yeah. I think Nicholas Latifi or George Russell's winning it overall. But, so it's just a little thing that they're rolling through. I think they do it every year. So one thing you find when you start digging deep is that, you know, sim racing hasn't just appeared when coronavirus happened for a while. You know, there was a whole Formula One championship last year, and Formula One championship was going this year. I think it's still running beside this one as well.
Talking about people getting involved and new... Joining us, we've got Andrew, your son, Byron Clark. Byron, good to have you along.
Thank you for having me.
We've got you here to talk about a couple of things. First of all, you play a lot of arcade games, and you've just got onto the sim, and you also had a crack at the Erebus Challenge, so I'm going to ask you about those. What arcade games do you currently play? Put the sim aside, what arcade games do you play?
I mainly use the PlayStation at the moment. I don't have a computer like I would like, but I use the PlayStation to play GTA, or I've recently gotten into a game called Project Cars 2 and Gran Turismo Sport.
So tell me, okay, the difference. Your dad's got the steering wheel and the pedals. Okay, let's have a go of this. Tell me the difference. What were your expectations, and how different was it?
Well, the first thing is the feel. Like, in regards to having a controller in your hand, you know, you can only do so much with just a thumbstick and a trigger. It doesn't feel the same. We're lucky in that regard with Gran Turismo, which we programmed in tilt control, so you can actually still tilt the controller to get turning in. But with a wheel, you can program in, like, the force feedback, so you can feel the car. If the car's overturning, the wheel suddenly becomes a little bit more easily to turn, or when you're going over dirt, it starts bumping and shaking a little bit, or our car's understeering, or your tires are cold, so the wheel's harder to turn. Yeah, so the feel's different. And, you know, learning that you can't just shove a car into a corner straight away, or you can't force the wheel to go in a certain direction. You have to turn into a corner gradually and figure out where the best exit is to come out quicker, instead of taking a corner thin all the way through, or figuring out how you can get in and out of certain areas quicker.
Yeah, I'd love to know, Byron, what sort of things did you do to try and improve your lap time? So when you started looking at some of the lap times that other guys were doing in the...
The first thing I did was take the car off automatic, because I was watching over Anton Di Pasquale's laps and the other guys, and I sat for about a solid 30 minutes and some of the things, just watching the other guys, seeing what they were doing, trying to get faster. And all of them were in manual. So I've only had this thing for a month and I don't have my driver's license yet. But I don't know how to drive a manual. I've never learned. The best experience I've had with a manual car is my mum driving it and her telling me when to pull the stick down and push it back up into a different slot. So I took the car off manual and then tried to get in just the feel of having to think about how many gears you have to downshift when going into a corner, or when it feels right to shift up a gear. And that helped my time out a fair bit as well. Other than that, it was just watching, seeing where they were braking, seeing where they were accelerating, how hard they were turning in, when their apex was, all that kind of stuff. Just trying to learn off the guys who've been doing it a bit longer than I have.
So one of the things you can do when you're in the qualifying, which you can't do when you're just doing a test practice run, is that you can jump into someone else's car and watch them do a lap.
Did you do that, Byron?
Yes.
So to explain to me what that was like, watching someone else. So you're in their car while they were doing a lap, like you were like a passenger.
Yeah. So the game has it programmed in, so you can come to the pits and you can get out of the car and you can change all the settings of your car, or you can go to different camera angles and you can watch the cars. So there's like TV ones that they use for if they live stream it and they're like doing like a commentator view and stuff like that. And then you can actually hop into the cockpit. So you can take a seat as see exactly what the driver of that car is doing. So you can see how hard they're turning the wheel or what their hands are doing when they're turning, and you can hear when they're shifting.
Yeah, great way of trying to see what other drivers are doing. And iRacing does something interesting as well, in that if you hop into another driver's cockpit view, you don't see 100% accurate data. iRacing protects that driver a little bit, so it will slightly obfuscate the gear shift and the steering angle and brakes. So
really,
it'll give you a really good idea of what they're doing. It does allow you to sort of at least see their lines they're driving and get an idea on the gears that they're using in each corner. But it still doesn't give you 100% of clarity in what they're doing. But we can talk a little bit later about some of the other tools you can use to look at data.
That would explain why I kept locking my wheels up by shifting too early.
Byron, I appreciate the time. And we might, if you don't mind, we might check in with you a few months down the track and see how you're going.
Sounds good. Thank you very much for having me.
I'll go and do your homework.
Oh, yes, sir.
Well, that was pretty insightful, actually. The one thing I got out of that is setups, guys. I mean, and this brings me into the subject that I wanted to talk about, so it was quite fortuitous. Setups, basic setups, what do you change? I understand there's tools and people to teach you how to do this.
Well, clearly Nathan can talk a lot about this in a second, but one of the things I found when I got into this was that I thought I was okay, but then I learned I was crap. And I learned I was crap because I went in and started hunting around and I saw some lap times. I thought, how can I be 4 seconds off the pace? And so I downloaded this telemetry system from, I think it's the Virtual Online Racing School or something.
The Virtual Racing School.
Yep, the Virtual Racing School. And so I downloaded the thing there. But, of course, all I could do was tell what I was doing. But then you can pay a little bit more money and they start bringing in tuition and all that sort of stuff. I can buy their setups and do all sorts of stuff there. So I kind of flicked that over to Nathan and I said, I'm out of my depth.
I'm going to drag Nathan into this conversation. Nathan, you've probably got a really good handle on a lot of this stuff. Let's start with the virtual racing school. I know you've used it, and I know that Fusion Sim Racing also, is that correct? You used the virtual racing school a little bit.
Yeah, that's right, Nev. Fusion is obviously a team. We're a team of drivers, and I guess the topic we're talking about is how to become a faster sim racer. And, you know, I think Byron touched on one way to do it, which is to look at what other people are doing, and certainly looking at their racing lines and trying to get an idea of what sort of gears they're using in different corners can help a lot. But the next step then is, I guess, really to try and understand how do I apply that knowledge to my driving. And Virtual Racing School is a great bit of telemetry software which allows you to look at all of your car telemetry around a lap. And if you're part of a team or you're with a group of friends, you can connect together and you can compare your lap to your friends' laps or your teammates' laps. And that's when it becomes really useful when you're trying to improve your lap times. But on top of that, like you were saying, you can also, if you subscribe to the product, which I think is only $50 or $100 a year to get some pretty decent access to it, you can get data packs from the Virtual Racing School drivers themselves. So they're a team of professional sim racers, and they produce instructional videos, and you know, they'll give you a full lap around a circuit, give you their setup, so you can download VRS setups and use them as well, and that can help. Yeah, really, really powerful tool.
So that, does that mean you can load the Ghost into your computer and then race against the Ghost and see if you can keep up with that? Is it like that?
No, you can download. So every week for every series, every official series on iRacing, VRS, there's a few other products. I think Pure Driving School does it as well, which is a similar product. They will produce their own setup and their own video of a lap and some their lap. And you can download their qualifying and their race setup and run it yourself. And, you know, sometimes the setups can help you with your own pace and speed. Like the baseline setup in iRacing is not going to be perfect for every track or for every driver for that matter. So you can download a setup. You can look at how they drove the lap, which is often unobtainable until you get real good. Believe me, there's always someone faster than you, Clarkie. And that's
absolutely. So that's what I was going to say. Did you use stuff like this when you were starting, or did it really come into play when you joined a team?
I didn't really use VRS so much when I was starting out. And I was in a similar situation to yourself and Byron. So I got pedals and wheels. And I started to realise that with the basic baseline setup that you get in R-Factor or iRacing, it'll only get you sort of so far. And it didn't suit my driving. So like I love a car, for example, that has a nice nose that will turn into an apex really nicely, a la Craig Lowndes sort of style. Didn't like a particularly loose rear end. Now, I realized that I had to start understanding how to engineer a car to get faster. So I had to look at what can I adjust in the V8 supercar, springs, shocks, you know, ARB, roll senders, you know, all this sort of stuff, which you can change in iRacing and R-Factor. So I really wanted to improve my car knowledge on engineering and handling. So I downloaded some articles, I read PDFs, I found VRS, and that's sort of how I started to understand vehicle dynamics and how to race properly. And all of that applies to real world racing as well. Thankfully, it applies to iRacing and sim racing too.
And I love the fact that you get a data trace of your lap. So for me, you know, when with my kind of amateur stuff that I've done.
Well, actually, Clarky, you've had a bit of a look into the virtual racing school as well, correct?
Yeah. It was one of the things I did, a bit of a Google search thinking, how slow am I? And when I found out how slow I was, I found the virtual racing school and went in there, and it didn't actually, because I haven't paid the money yet, but it didn't actually tell me why I was so slow, but I was able to look at the consistency of my laps, and I could work out the corner that I was least consistent on, which was it's the second corner in the supercar at Okayama. And I was, you know, very, very inconsistent. My chart was up and down like a yo-yo there. So I knew that it was that high-speed turn with a bit of understeer that was turning into tail oversteer that was bugging me. So like you, if I learned how to do the setups and things right, I could probably start to dial the car to the way I wanted to drive. And as you say, the variables are massive. Like you go in there and it's like, oh God, I can do that and I can do that and I can do that and I can, and you can just keep going forever. So I think, you know, finding some guidance through this is critical. Well, you're going to spend a lot of time just trying to work out what each tick box does or what each arrow does. And, you know, yep. So whether you find someone like Nathan and join his team, and Nathan will step in and help you with there, or whether you go to a virtual racing school type of setup. I think it's critical.
The other thing I'd say is too that a lot of people focus on setup. So, you know, I see a lot of people talking in iRacing forums going, how do I get faster? I need a better setup because my setup's not good enough. A good setup might give you half a second a lap, maybe. I think, you know, so much of it comes down to how you drive the car. And it was fascinating to me. You know, a year or two ago, we were running in an endurance championship, and our team had a great battle with Shane Van Gisbergen at the time and Justin Rougier. And we were both driving the same car. It was a Porsche, and Giz had a really fast car. He's a fast driver anyway. So at the end of the race, I said, look, mate, can we swap setups? Can I have a look at what setup you're running? I'm just really interested to see how you set up your car, because they had certain advantages out of some corners and vice versa. So Shane sent me his setup. I sent him ours. He probably did nothing with it. He wouldn't care. But I was very interested to see what setup he had come up with. And they were two completely different styles of car setup, but both achieved the same lap time. So
you tried his setup?
Yeah, I did. Yeah.
And how did you find it to drive? Did you notice a difference?
Yeah, it was very different. It was far more taily, a lot looser than ours. Well, ours was very conservative, and that was, you know, partly because we were in a team, and so you have to have a setup that suits every driver in the team. Everyone has to be comfortable with that car, and we were driving against a supercar driver who's very experienced, and Justin Rougier, who won the Aussie Racing Car Series. So. Yeah, there's a difference there too.
And it's funny, you're talking about that. Like I'm in the, or just finishing another book with Mark Scaife, and he's talking about the times when he's sharing a car with Craig Lowndes or with Peter Brock or whoever it is, and they're going through that battle is how do we set up the car, you know, because as you say, Lowndes likes it to point in and go. Scaife likes it to be very precise, and Brock didn't care. What he said was, and you'll love this line, because he said, you just told Brock it was good and he thought it was and went out there and did it. And so he was an interesting character, but it is the thing. It is about working out what works for you. And like you said before, you know, you like it pointy, but you don't like it too taily. So you're on a very delicate balance where you've got to get your car right. And you could, as I say, you could spend, it wouldn't matter what car you're in, you could spend days and weeks trying to work that out if you didn't understand the nuances of every one of those little buttons that you can push. Supercar driver obviously has a team of engineers sitting in the workshop. So I don't see why you can't have a team of engineers sitting on the internet.
There's two things I want to talk about, driving with teammates. But before I get onto that, I think it was Clarke, you were talking about you can be racing a track, send your setup and that for someone, and like for $4 or $5, they'll send you some feedback or a setup. Is that right? Am I got that right?
I think that's what the virtual racing school does, is that you can send them in stuff and they will analyze it for you and come back and give you some thoughts. But yeah, there's a service where you can download your telemetry chart for them to analyze.
Ah, cool. Nathan, you touched on driving with teammates. In regards to setup, and so it must be like running a real race team. If you've got a couple of teammates, you can just share telemetry and all that. Is that how it works with you guys?
Yeah, it's a good question, Nev. And we've spoken to a few other team owners as well about their process of running a team car for an event. Everyone's a little bit different. We run our team in a reasonably structured way. So before an event, we will identify the cars that we want to enter. So we have the Le Mans 24-hour special event on iRacing coming up in about 3 or 4 weeks. So we'll probably run an LMP1 car and a GTE.
So Sim Fusion Racing are going to run two cars in Le Mans?
Yeah, at least two, I would think. Yeah, we've got some drivers who are keen to do it. So it looks like I might end up driving the LMP1 car with three guys. So
much better.
Yeah, the fast one.
Yeah, we started doing a bit of testing this week. And so basically what we did was we first said, okay, let's get together in a group so we can communicate about setup. We found a couple of base setups to work with from some of the different platforms that supply setups out there. We had our own setups from previous years. So we go through a structured process. We'll all try the sets. We'll get back together, talk about which ones we liked, what sort of lap times we did, maybe look at a bit of data initially. We'll decide on the particular car that we want to use for that event. And once we decide that, we will then set up our own private hosting sessions on iRacing, just for our own team, with that car. And we will load in a few sets and we start quite a structured way of improving those setups. And we collect feedback from all the team members. So what someone might not like understeer in certain corners, someone else might want to run, you know, different camber or have a different brake setting or whatever. And we'll try and come to a set which works well for everyone, but still allows different, you know, characteristics. Like, I may not love the set, it might be too understeery, but I can move the brake bias back a little bit while we're racing, things like that. So it's all about coming to a consensus, because the week before the race, we want to do hundreds of laps on the same set, so we're all good to go. We know what's going to happen. We know how the tyres last, and we're in the best situation for a victory.
How many drivers in each car?
It varies by the event. I think the minimum is two for an endurance.
For Le Mans.
But for Le Mans, usually you'd want at least four. We did the GTE with three drivers last year, and that meant a few of us doing four-hour stints.
Ooh, it's tough.
The night too. We won the event by doing it, but it was a massively tough event to do that way. So probably four for this one, yeah.
So given you're getting in and out of the car with everybody, you have to carry a dicky seat with you? Yeah.
A virtual dicky seat.
A virtual dicky seat, yeah.
Whatever you like.
Okay, moving on. Joining us in the studio is cricketing legend Brad Hodge. I'm a Victorian, so he's definitely a legend. But he's found his way into, well, esports with the Supercars E-Series Celebrity Challenge, which he's in. How you going, Brad? And tell us, how did you get involved in the Supercars and esports?
How did it happen? Well, it was a mystery, and I think it was promoted by Barry Ryan, who I'd spent some time with at Erebus Motorsport. And I think he dobbed me in for it, sent a message to Supercars, and there I was trying to find some speed at Bathurst, which was a difficult challenge and quite hard, actually. So it was a good insight into, you know, I've watched those guys burn around those track for a number of years, you know, the great challenges between Brock, all the legends, and trying to do it myself, which was difficult.
There's two challenges here. One is that you've got sim racing, you've got real racing, and they're different skills, as Nathan can no doubt talk to you about. But the other part is you're switching a cricket bat and, you know, facing 150-kilometre-hour balls, jumping into a car and firing at walls at 200 or 300 kilometres per hour. It's a transition for you, but athletes, you know, you're geared for it, aren't you?
Yeah, we certainly thought we were until the reality hits that, you know, you can't be as fast as the person next to you. So, yeah, we all think we'll be good at other sports, and then you quickly realise that every sport is individualistic and it has its own skill sets, and a huge appreciation for the skills which not only normal racing brings, but also sim racing. I first went to Erebus to have a practice, and Anton was behind me, and I punched out a 210. I thought, oh, that's pretty impressive. And then he just goes, oh, here, I can just show you a few little tips which might help you. And he just punches out a 201. And as a sportsman, you think that that's going to be a really positive influence? My, it was awfully deflating, I can tell you that right now. When you know you've got to try and find 10 seconds to be good at the sport, that was hard work to see.
Well, the beauty, though, is that if you make a mistake in here, it's not going to cost you a few $100,000 a panel. So
true, very true. Unfortunately, what it did do, like when they said they'd turn off crash mode, it didn't seem to work on my car, actually, because I got poleaxed at the somewhere, I think maybe the cutting, maybe, and I ended up, I think, next to someone's caravan at the top of the hill. And I was sitting in the pits for, I think it was over five minutes. Because it says your car's getting towed back. And I'm like, I don't think it can actually be physically towed back, because I think I'm actually next to someone's caravan at the park at the top of the hill. I think she's towed it, and I should just reset and start again. But yeah, the challenges, I guess, there was a few incidents in the racing. I think Mick Doohan was firing everyone into the wall, and yeah, there was some pretty cool stuff. I think Toby Price was aggressive as well. But I think that's the trick, isn't it? That, you know, there's no financial penalty. But, you know, if there was a financial penalty attached to sim racing, I reckon there'd be a lot more caution for sure.
I know you've always had an interest in motorsport, and going back to, I guess, that interest and where it came from, I remember seeing you at the Australian Grand Prix, and you won the celebrity race in 2013, I think it was. And then somehow you found your way into an involvement with Erebus. So you've obviously always had an interest in motorsport, but there was some connection with David Reynolds at some point and got you involved in Erebus a little bit.
Yeah, there was. I mean, that celebrity challenge, the Grand Prix was awesome. It was a great experience to spend some time with Mark Scaife and just learn a few tricks of the trade. I'd done a few track days in my car So I had a little bit of understanding of the skill about, you know, what's required to hit the apex and all that sort of stuff. So, you know, come that stage, I was sort of well and truly in front of a couple of, people who had just been brought out of The Voice and a few things like that. So I had them covered. I was okay with speed there. Finding yourself in a sim racing against a couple of Bathurst champions and some Fink champions and motocross champions and some team owners. I mean, Zach Brown was there, of course, last night. That was amazing. And thinking, how am I going to get around this track fast enough? David Reynolds was at a cricket game, which I was playing, a big bash game at Marvel Stadium. And I think he was there to promote, I don't know, maybe it's the lead up to the Supercars series. And I was a huge fan and followed Erebus through their, you know, Mercedes, you know, transition to Holden. You know, so I was happy that they were making some progress. And I said to Dave, you know, how's things going, blah, blah, blah. And he said, look, you're next in the bat. Why don't you try and concentrate on what you're doing? Why don't you come down to the shop during the week? And that's sort of how it happened. And I went down to the shop. You know, I met Barry Ryan and we started talking about a few things. And I just said, look, do you mind if I, you know, just hang around for a few days just to have a look at the way your team dynamic works? And, you know, I'm a head coach over in the Indian Premier League at that time. So we're always sort of looking for little ways to improve team dynamics. And that's how it worked. And, you know, he was happy for me to hang around for a little bit and bounce a few ideas off him about how our sport rolled, which they're actually quite similar, to be honest. There's a backload of work that goes on, there's a strategy to it, and then ultimately you've got an ego which goes out and center stage and tries to do it. It's no different than cricket. We're exactly the same in that sort of mold, and a whole lot of variables, you know, track conditions, sunlight. Same with cricket. Is the ball swinging? Is it overcast overhead? So a lot of little similarities that can cross over to these sports.
So as a wannabe racing driver,
yes,
the bug bitten and we're getting a sim on our transition to a racing car.
Well, the bug was there a long time ago, but there's a thing called finances and a wife and two kids, which can often put a dent in your dreams. Now, my wife's been very supportive in chasing my cricket dream for the best part of 20 to 25 years. She's not sure there's a future in a 45-year-old belting themselves around a race car track at fast times, thinking that they can be a race car driver. Wannabe, yes, it will happen. I'm not saying it's going to be a success. Well, I'm not saying I'm going to be fast, but it will definitely happen. There's a few tournaments, there's a few events I've got my eye on. The Bathurst 6-hour, I think, running around on that would be a bit of fun. I wouldn't mind touching into Porsche Challenge for a little bit for a couple of seasons, burning some cash there. But, hey, you only live once, don't you? So, I think for me as a sportsman, believe it or not, we've always sort of lived on the edge of performance. So cricket in particular, it's so final. You can go out there and you can, you know, nick the ball, first ball, and you're out for a duck, and then you walk off and you try and work out how to get better. I think motorsport's a little bit like that where, you know, if you make a mistake, it's detrimental to your performance. You know, you're done for the day. So they're very close like that, and I really like that knife-edge sort of attitude that motorsport brings.
I've led a little bit off Nathan through this journey, and part of it is simulated by stealth. So it's $500 to get yourself a wheel and a set of pedals, and
yep,
then all of a sudden the rest will sneak in the back, you know, and then all of a sudden you'll have the whole setup, and she'll have no idea. Like, what you've got to do is that it's cheap and it's safe. You know, so these yes, your sales pitch.
Yeah, I like it. I'm sort of more, you know, let's just go the whole way and get the 25 grand motion simulator and be done with it and apologise later.
Yeah, Nathan has some strategies.
That's the thing. I mean, for us, if we're going to compete, we want to be good and we want to be the best. So that's the problem. So, you know, we're just not happy with average.
Talking about competition and not being happy with average, I know it's a bit of a step when you hop into a real car, and you said you had Mark Scaife give you some tips back in the Grand Prix days, and no doubt you would have learnt a hell of a lot. How much of that could you apply to the sim, and was the sim as big a challenge as you thought it was going to be, especially around Bathurst in a V8? That's tough in real life, but it's also very tough in the sim.
It was real tough, actually. And I think that, you know, when I was sort of looking at the times that the people were doing, you know, when they first started practicing, I think there was a call to change the track, only because it's such a difficult track. And, you know, even in qualifying, you couldn't touch the wall, or you couldn't make, if you touched the wall or another car, your qualifying was null and void. So that's sort of, that was a real trick in itself, because you can make a little error, you know, everyone. And the other thing was, is that the difficult thing for me to learn was the distance, or the perception of where the car was in relation to the wall. I felt that when I went sort of round past the grate, that I was close to the wall, but the reality was I was probably still a metre and a half away from the line that I should have been. But that was one of the things on the sim which I sort of had to, you know, come to grips with or watch. And then I'd watch Baz in his sim and he'd push it right up against the wall, and I'm like, how did he not hit the wall? Like, it just looks like it should hit the wall, but it doesn't. But they're the sort of millimetres that you have to find at that track. And that's when I think when you look at the real deal and, you know, you see Davey Reynolds pump out, you know, a thing under extreme pressure in the top 10, or Scotty McLaughlin or someone, you just got to take your hat off and go, wow, that's pretty cool, actually.
So tell me about the setup for you for last night. I mean, you went to a venue that has a couple of simulators, so you're able to talk to people in the process. I mean, how was it all structured for you?
Yeah, so it was at the Hyper Simulators, which is out at Lilydale or Ringwood, somewhere there. Lilydale, I think. And it was a great setup. There was probably five sort of simulators set up at a distance around the factory. There's, I think, around 10, but there's five with big, large screens. So there was a Motion, which Scott Petter was on, myself, Peter Siddle, and Richards. It was really a pretty cool setup. You go there, you know, you sort of learn how it works and you get used to it. It's just funny because the simulator at Erebus was still the braking setup. So I had to go from there and then set it up on that system the same way that I've been training there. So I went straight from that one to the simulator Hyper and just kept locking the rears. And I'm like, man, I've got to change this setup. And that's something which, as a sportsman that's never done it before, you're just going, what's this all about? How's it not just the same at that simulator and this simulator? I didn't know you had to change. And, you know, when I heard that Brody Kostecki was doing the engineering to e-racing, like, as a supporter, I'm like, how do you have to engineer it? What's the point? Surely just get in there, hold the steering wheel, belt it around the track, and we all have a bit of fun and you're done. But no, there's so much more to it.
It's funny, that's what we say about you cricketers with your different size bats and long studs and short studs. And it's like, yes. What difference does it make?
Oh, you never know, would you? But, yeah, we're all pretty fancy about that stuff.
So where to now for you? I mean, are we going to see you joining Nathan's racing team soon and, you know, getting serious? Or, you know, surely you can convince the missus?
Well, it's sort of weighing up price factor, isn't it? So, you know, looking at 25 grand for a Motion sim out of Hyper, it's probably going to cost me 75% stake in my house and my kids. So financially, it's probably not worth it. Now, my wife actually said to me, she goes, my God, if you come home with a simulator next week, that's the end of it. We are done. So I've probably just got to just work my way into it and just encourage her. There's a really good idea. You know, honey, look, if I'm going to go around in a GT3 challenge car, I have to get some sim time, have to know what it's about. There you go. Bang. Job done. Sold. We're on the money.
We could always work on a sponsorship pitch for you, and we'll go ahead and get yes. Some Indian company who'd love to sponsor a cricketer in sim racing. You know, I'm sure they could put up the money.
Sure, they could.
I can do the words.
It's a good idea, actually, yeah.
Yeah, I'll do the words. Neville will do the image, and Nathan will teach you how to do it.
Do you want to start a race team?
I love it. I've got some big connections over in India, some big players over there. I'm sure they might be able to help me out. Why not?
We're cheaper than Boxy.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah, what do you do? Yeah, he's, well, let's see, 20%?
20%, yeah.
Let's call it 10, we're done.
Yeah.
Okay, Brad, well, we appreciate the time today. Thank you, and good luck for the future.
Yeah, good fun. You keep an eye out for me, Nate, to see. You've been watching my bonnet for a long period of the next year, I reckon. I'll get in there.
Yeah, we can give you some training. That's all good.
Sweet, mate.
Cheers.
Cheers. Thanks, boys. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Andrew Clark, Nathan Huppitz, and Neville Wilkinson. E-Racing X has been produced for Motorsport 360 The App by Big Hair Productions. We would also like to thank Byron Clark and Brad Hodge for their time on the show today.
The song you're listening to is Electric Cars by Dave Butt, and all other production and sound design is by yours truly. You can get eRacing X from most good podcast destinations, including Anchor, Spotify and iTunes. For extended interviews, stories and all other extras, you can view and listen at our website eracingx.com. As always, thanks for listening and take care of yourselves.